What is up, everyone? I'm Zach, your host of the Auxoro podcast, where music artists, athletes, entrepreneurs, and other interesting human beings dive deep into the story beyond the surface. This episode is brought to you by The Aux. The Aux is a short-form podcast produced by Auxoro, bringing you a daily dose of uncensored wisdom to jumpstart your life Monday through Friday. 5-minute episodes, no bullshit, no topic off limits. We explore topics like fashion, porn, relationships, meditation, and more. You can subscribe to this podcast by searching The Aux, A-U-X, wherever you listen to podcasts or by visiting the link in the description. Auxoro is a completely independent platform and we rely on you, the listeners, to help spread the word. You can support this podcast in a couple of ways. Number one, you can subscribe, leave a review, and rate us on the iTunes store. This helps us appear higher in searches, which means more people will find out about these conversations. And number two, you can tell a friend, write a blog post, and tag us on Instagram and Twitter. This not only boosts my ego, but it helps us spread the word about the podcast on social media. This time, we sat down with Marshall McKenzie, an intermittent fasting and fitness coach, an online entrepreneur, and the founder of EverFit, a platform designed to educate people on intermittent fasting and give them the tools to succeed. So what is intermittent fasting, commonly referred to as IF? It is an eating pattern where you cycle between periods of eating and fasting. So some common windows you'll hear in the intermittent fasting community are 16-8, 18-6, and 24. So for example, I'll take 16-8. This means that you would fast for 16 hours and your eating window would be 8 hours. So you would start eating, let's just say at 12 noon and then stop at 8 p.m. and then you wouldn't eat again until the next day of 12 noon. So think of intermittent fasting less as a diet regarding what you eat and think of it more as a time-restricted way of eating. It's about when you eat, not what you eat. And we'll go into more detail, of course, in the podcast. On a personal note, I started intermittent fasting about a year and a half ago. And I always tell people, along with meditation, it's one of the top two things that has changed my life. Intermittent fasting has given me more energy in the mornings, especially. I feel less tied to food. I come from the world of athletics and baseball, and I was eating 5 to 6 times a day. Basically, whenever I felt a little bit hungry, I was eating. I was never going, you know, more than 2 to 3 hours without eating, except when I slept. Also, intermittent fasting has helped me save a little bit of money because when you're not eating 3 meals a day, I eat twice a day. I basically, you know, I skip breakfast. I start eating at 1 o'clock. You tend to save a bit more money and you're not spending time planning out your food. Your day is not planned around food as much as it is when you're eating, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a day and constantly snacking. And so I've definitely felt the physical effects, the psychological effects, and emotional effects of intermittent fasting, which is why I'm excited to talk to Marshall about his experience with it. And he has much more expertise than I do. So in this episode, we talk about Marshall's introduction to intermittent fasting, the physical and mental benefits of IF, how Marshall's father's diagnosis of ALS inspired him to build a life for himself around fitness, and more. So without further ado, here's our exhilarating conversation with Marshall McKenzie. All right, so I thought that a good place to start for this conversation would be the general definition of intermittent fasting. And so I have a definition that I looked up and I want you to add whatever you think should be added to the less nuanced definition of intermittent fasting before we get into the specifics of it. So the definition that I looked up was more or less a time-restricted eating pattern where you cycle between periods of eating and fasting. Some of the most common patterns are a 12-hour eating window followed by 12-hour fasting, 16-hour fasting window followed by an 8-hour eating window and a 20-hour fasting window, followed by a 4-hour fasting window. So a lot of people, if you're listening and you're not familiar with intermittent fasting, some people that do intermittent fasting frequently might say 16, 8, or 24, something like that. So the point from that definition is it's about when you eat and not what you eat. And feel free to go ahead and add to anything you think is missing from that.
It's like an umbrella term for various diet eating patterns. So if your goal is for weight loss, because typically that's what it's most beneficial for, I would recommend doing, say, 18-hour fast, 6-hour eating window. Because basically the longer you go without calories, the less likely you are to eat over your daily maintenance required calories. In order to gain weight and be obese, you have to be consistently eating over your required body's calories, right? Because then your body will take those calories and they'll store them as body fat for later use. But since we have such an abundance of food nowadays, there's that time when you actually need that fat to survive doesn't ever happen. So basically people just compile fat and fat and fat and eventually become overweight, right? So the idea behind intermittent fasting is to tap into these fat stores to lower your body fat percentage and to use artificial famine to lose weight, as if you would have, say 10,000 years ago. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
When the cavemen roamed, right? That's how they did it. So they'd be like hunting all day and they wouldn't have a meal. They don't have meals at the store. They can't go pick them up. So they'd be hunting all day, starving, and then they'd catch a deer, catch whatever, right? And then they would feast, like, because they don't know when they're going to get their next meal next, right? So they just eat and kill that thing and just eat it down. And then basically, I don't know if you've ever done research on like the general idea of intermittent fasting, have you?
I've done some research on some of the evolutionary tiebacks, like what you were alluding to with how humans ate thousands of years ago and how the sort of the Western civilization idea of the diet goes against that and kind of keeps our digestive system working constantly when we weren't built like that. Is that kind of what you're referring to?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I'm saying. Because like our bodies, like they don't need to be eating every single minute of the day. Like there's a lot of stuff that happens while you're fasting that's actually good inside your body, because your body doesn't have to focus on constantly digesting food. It can focus on bettering itself. So it's actually very, very beneficial.
Yeah. And you mentioned that you do 16-8, the 16 hours of fasting and 8 hours of eating window, which is generally what I do. I start eating around 12:30, 1 o'clock. And my last meal is usually between 8 o'clock, 8:30, maybe the latest 9 o'clock, but it's usually around a 16 to 17 hour fasting window for me.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because before I started intermittent fasting, I started after my college baseball career ended about 2 years ago. The idea was so foreign and weird to me, and so much of Western society, definitely the United States. I grew up in New York and I just moved into Brooklyn this year. So much of the culture is built around this constant eating and, eating five to six times a day. Yeah, I was eating even more. Yeah,
because
it was preached in the athlete world. You know, you want to eat 5 to 6 times a day. I was basically eating when I was hungry. And so I don't actually know how my body would have responded when I was a baseball player. I never tried intermittent fasting. I assume that it would be hard to perform a 3-hour game. I was a pitcher on no food.
Yeah. That would be a little unreasonable, I think.
Yeah, but the whole idea, like the idea never even occurred to me. It wasn't even an option to me until I kind of went down some rabbit holes of looking for different diets and, going on the Joe Rogan podcast and having people introduce the idea. And it started more out of a utility thing for me because I was like, wait, I only have to eat twice a day. I don't have to watch as much what I'm eating, count calories all the time. And I will most likely spend less money and spend less time preparing food. I was like, let's fucking go. Like,
literally,
I'm going to try this. And that was 2 years ago. The first 2 to 3 weeks, sucked for me. Like I was kind of in like this hazy fog, but then after a couple of weeks, I did notice a huge energy spike and just like an overall better sense of well-being.
That's literally exactly it. You just nail it on the head. So like, I love it because I wake up, I don't have to think about food. I'm not hungry because my body's so adapted to it. First thing I do is I'll brew myself a nice cup of black coffee because I'm a coffee fanatic, right? And then that blunts my hunger even further. So then after that, I drink a cup of coffee, say 8 a.m. and I will be good until maybe 11 to 12. Just before I have another cup of coffee, I'll go work out and do my fasted workout because I find I have so much more energy now when I'm working out. And it's just, I find it much more effective to work out without a big lump of food in your stomach. You know what I mean? A lot of people will disagree with me on this, and I would have disagreed with myself on this even 3 years ago, right? I would say, work out, empty stomach, you're crazy. Like you'll pass out, right? At first, yeah, you might feel a little lightheaded and a little not energetic, but give it 2 weeks of working out on an empty stomach and your body adapts to it. And honestly, I feel sluggish. I feel no energy. I feel like crap when I work out with food in my stomach. Now, that's why I always tend to work out in the morning because that's when my fast period is until 2 p.m. or so. So
I've thought about possibly changing my workout routine. So the first time I eat, which is around 1 o'clock, I'll go then another 5 hours and then I'll work out after work, which is usually around 6 or 6:30. And then that will be, and then I'll eat pretty much as soon as I'm done. It takes me about 15 minutes to walk back from the gym. And so I've never consistently worked out on a fast or in the middle of a fast. For me, my primary concern has always been not the more circuit type high rep low weight, but if I was doing a more strength focused workout. Do you feel like you still have the strength capabilities there when you're in the middle of a fast?
Oh definitely. I personally take BCAAs during my fast, which some will argue that technically would break your fast, but it's like 20 calories. So I take that to try to prevent muscle breakdown while I'm in a fasted state for my workouts. And I hit all-time records on my bench press, on my deadlift, on my squat last winter when I really got into intermittent fasting. And it's just, I found it's way more effective. Your body can focus on working out and sweating and exercising rather than digesting food and exercising. You know what I mean? It's just, I think it's for me, it's a no-brainer, but a lot of people, it would take a lot of convincing to switch to fasted workouts.
How did intermittent fasting come into your life? What was your dietary style and your thinking process behind what you were putting into your body before you got introduced to intermittent fasting?
All right, so prior to intermittent fasting, I started working out in like 2012. You know, I was 15 years old, just this high school kid trying to become this big beefy guy at high school. So you know what I mean? So at that point, I had no idea what I was really doing. I just kind of worked out, didn't even really eat enough, didn't even plan the meals. I just ate whatever. And then in about 2015, 2016, I became a little more into it and I wanted to actually reach the goal that I tried reaching before that I slacked at. So I bought these little meal plan containers off of Amazon, 6 meals a day. And I'd wake up, have, you know, egg, some like asparagus, some like protein, a protein shake. And then I go work out, come back, have a chicken meal with potatoes and greens. And then I'd have a steak meal 2 hours later. And I did this until my first year of university, which was 3 years ago. And oh my God, it was a pain in the ass to meal prep constantly and always be trying to eating and not missing meals and stuff. And then out of the blue, my brother decided to text me that day in first year of university. And he's like, Google intermittent fasting. And I was like, well, I have no idea what that is. I don't know what that means. I don't know what it is. All right, I'll do it.
Yeah.
I Googled it and it said, what you said earlier was like a diet, time-restricted dieting, right? And I was just like, this must be some new gimmick. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Why would you not feed yourself food? You know what I mean? I was completely against it. And I was like, bro, you're going to hurt yourself. Like you're not eating, you need food, you know, like the typical mindset of most people now. And then after that, he convinced me, he's like, think about the evolutionary aspect of it. It makes way more sense for your body not having to be eating constantly. Like look up the benefits of it. So I looked up the benefits And I was just like, whoa, if this is real, I have to give it a shot. So the next day I skipped breakfast. Like, I don't like to say skip breakfast because it sounds bad. I didn't eat breakfast that day.
Yeah, you just like postpone it, basically.
Exactly. I still eat breakfast foods. I just eat them later in the day. Breakfast is my favorite meal of the day.
Oh yeah, I love doing that. I love eating breakfast foods around 12:30, 1 o'clock.
Exactly. Yeah, I'll make like bacon, eggs, toast, home fries, something like that, you know? And then I eventually, you know, at first I was like, this is insane. Like, I feel like I'm stretching myself to reach something that's not obtainable. Like, it's just not, this is silly. I was essentially telling myself, but I stuck with it for about a week. And then after about a week, I noticed there's a turning point where I felt good, you know? It felt good to wake up, to not eat instantly. And I looked forward to having that meal later in the day, because I find when you fast, you appreciate your meals more because you don't have them as often. So you get two meals a day. Mm-hmm. And during those two meals, you feast like a big, delicious, hearty meal rather than a whole bunch of small ones when you're still craving food after, but you can't eat anymore because then you'll go over your calories. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So after that, it was just like, that was the turning point. About after a week, maybe maximum 2 weeks. And then I started drinking more coffee to blunt my appetite if I ever needed it. And it just, I don't know, I get so much energy with a fasted stomach and black coffee in me. Like, I'll, whenever I'm doing my productive work, because like I'm an entrepreneur, I work from home. Whenever I'm doing like my most important work, I'll do it in a fasted state because I find I have the most clear-minded thoughts when I'm not digesting food. So I don't know. I just love it. It's become a way of life for me, and it's so easy to practice, right? So
yeah, and going back to the normalcy aspect or the non-normal aspect of intermittent fasting compared to what most people do today, I was going through some older perspectives ranging from philosophers or thinkers back in the day about intermittent fasting. They didn't necessarily use the term intermittent fasting, but for example, there's a quote from Plato where he says, "I fast for greater physical and mental efficiency." There are inscriptions on pyramids about fasting. There are hundreds of other examples of people thousands of years ago saying how they feel better without food, and that like allusions to food being the devil almost. Like, if you want to have mental and physical clarity, like stay away from food for a little bit. So maybe the term intermittent fasting is relatively new, but the idea of going without food goes back thousands of years.
Certainly. It certainly does. Like, even some religions practice it. I don't know which one's offhand, but I've heard other religions, maybe it was in the Middle East or so, or that area, they literally practice intermittent fasting, and they have for thousands and thousands of years. And like, I don't know if it's rude to say, but they're not obese. Like, they're not overweight. They're in shape. Like, you know what I mean? So it's not a new concept whatsoever. Like, the term intermittent fasting, I think it puts a label on an artificial feast and famine. You know what I mean? Because like, it's hard to make yourself like famine when there's so much food available. Like, we don't need to famine. There's no point in it. You know what I mean? So that's what it's like, an artificial term for it, but I think it's extremely useful.
Yeah, I think the word fasting too kind of brings up images of people walking around feeling weak, looking weak, or, you know, like they're about to pass out. And ironically now, I feel the most clear when I'm in a fasted state. I think when I realize how not normal it is, or how much other people can tend to be slaves to eating, is when I'm around my friends. And so if I'm going into the city for the day, so that's like a few stops from me on the subway from Brooklyn, and we're walking around for 5 to 6 hours, I haven't eaten yet. Like, sometimes I'll almost go to dinner by accident some days. Like, I don't even mean to. We're just doing stuff. But then I'm with people who don't fast, and we're stopping, you know, for yogurt. And then 45 minutes, an hour later, we're stopping for something else. Or, you know, they can't do an activity that's physical unless we get more food. And it's not necessarily like their fault. They're used to eating all the time, and I was like that. But I noticed the difference when I'm with other people, and I'm like, damn, like, I feel great right now. Like, I could go another 4 hours without eating if I wanted to. Like, it's so much more obvious when you're with other people who don't do it.
I know. This, when I first started practicing it, and I went to my buddy's house, funny story. I woke up the next morning after spending the night there, and his family had made me breakfast, right? Because they just make breakfast every morning. Mm-hmm. And I sat there and like, I didn't know they had made breakfast yet. And they were just brewing coffee, whatever. And I took a coffee, started drinking it. And they were like, "So Marshall, dude, what would you like for breakfast? So like which foods here would you like?" And I was just like, "Oh, I'm okay. Really. I'm not too hungry right now. Maybe later I'll have something." And they're like, they thought it was rude because I refused their dinner, which it might have been on, or their dinner, their breakfast. It might have been rude, but at the same time,
yeah,
I just wasn't hungry at 8 a.m. You know what I mean? Because I was used to not eating. So like that really put it into perspective of how engraved in our society, in Western society, that breakfast, lunch, and dinner is. And it's like, it's really not necessary. It's not necessary in my eyes. Like you can skip dinner if you'd like, mm-hmm. rather than breakfast. But I find that's also very difficult to do from the social aspect, because most people like eating at nighttime, going out for dinner, or going out with friends, getting some drinks. And like, you don't want to be fasting when you're going out to get drinks with your friends, because then obviously you won't be able to join them. So
that brings up another question too. I would describe myself as a social drinker. I drink much less than when I was in school. When I was in school, I was drinking, you know, 2 times a week, pretty heavily, sometimes 3 times a week if I was out of season in baseball. During the season, I really didn't drink at all that much, maybe like once or twice a month here and there. But now I enjoy much more sipping on drinks, like having 1 or 2 drinks throughout the night and being much more energetic and not slurring my words and remembering conversations. So I drink socially. I would say I'm pretty good now about going past into the blackout stage and like making the whole next day a complete wash. For you, how does, if you do drink, you may not drink, but how does that fit? How does drinking alcohol fit with your intermittent fasting?
So personally, I've never really been much of a drinker. And as any of my friends would agree, I go to the bar on occasion. Like if they'll all go most nights, like every weekend. I don't join them every single time. Not because I don't want to drink. It's more of, or not because I don't like want to join the social aspect. It's more just, I don't like alcohol at all. Like I don't like the feeling it gives me. I don't like the taste. Like why would I put this in my body if I'm not enjoying it? You know what I mean? But with that being said, I do enjoy like an ice cold beer on like a hot day or something. But that's pretty much to the extent of how much I drink. But I wouldn't drink more than 2 times a week, a few beers here and there. And I would recommend that for other people as well. If you're trying to practice intermittent fasting, obviously keep your booze within your eating window. And don't, for the love of God, don't binge drink. Because binge drinking is like the opposite of what you're trying to achieve. Like I know that's a hard for a lot of people, especially people in universities and younger guys that love just...
Oh yeah, that's like the whole culture.
Exactly. And that's really the people that have to worry about not making progress with intermittent fasting are the people who are binge drinking every single weekend. They might not drink all week, but when you go out Friday or Saturday and then you drink, who knows, 10 drinks, you're literally consuming enough calories that all the calories you burn during the week, you're putting yourself back into a surplus on the weekend. So it's basically putting you back to square one just by going out one night. So one night of drinking will set you back a week of progress. Like it's, if you're trying to actually lose weight, drinking and losing weight don't go hand in hand. Like they're literally the complete opposite in my eyes. So you like by all means have a couple drinks, keep it to like light beers, lighter calorie drinks, light liquors, maybe a glass of wine. But like, there's no need to binge drink. I know some people love it, but whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I ever actually loved it. It was such an assumed thing where, you know, you're in college and, you know, a lot of times with baseball, you go through an entire season of restriction. Like you're restricting yourself to perform and holding your body to higher standards than you normally would if you weren't playing baseball, and that's all spring and winter. And so in the fall, there's kind of like this release. And if you're on a college campus, naturally that's binge drinking. But I do agree that it kills your progress. And I've seen it in myself when I was a heavier drinker. Now I really like vodka sodas. Vodka.
Yeah, that's perfect.
Is a shot of vodka is 60 calories. Club soda is zero. And I'll have a couple of those when I go out. And now I started drinking just seltzer and limes in between. Like I may have one or two vodka sodas and then the rest of the night, I'll just drink seltzer and limes to satisfy the fixation of kind of like holding a drink in my hand, but not actually having to drink alcohol.
Yeah.
So I'll do that most of the time when I go out. But yeah, I totally agree that the calories that you drink when, if you're drinking light beer, that's even a lot. Some light beers are 100, 120 calories yep. per beer. And then if you're drinking a regular beer, you have six or seven of those, even 10 in a night. Those could be 200-300 calories each. You just had more than a day's worth of food within the span of 4 hours. And then you're probably going to eat after that too, because with yep. binge drinking comes the binge eating
yep.
at 4 a.m., 5 a.m. So then if you want to honor the fast the next day, you can't eat till like 10 o'clock.
And yeah, really though.
If you're going to follow it. So I try to be conscious of that.
When you're hungover the next day too, I personally, if I'm ever hungover, not very often, but I tend to want to eat like sooner in the day. Cause if you're like, I can't fast and be hungover. I just want to eat on an empty stomach. It's not a thing. You know what I mean?
No, you're dehydrated. You're craving sugar and carbs.
Exactly.
Like
yeah.
your body's defenses are down. Like you're craving the types of food that you normally wouldn't if you're hungover.
Exactly. So it's the complete opposite of if you're trying to make progress in my eyes.
So to switch gears a little bit, you were telling me a bit before the interview that your father was diagnosed with ALS. And it's ALS, for those listening that are not familiar with the disease, it's a neurodegenerative disease that affects the brain and spinal cord and is linked to muscle wasting. And feel free to jump into that definition. I'm actually blanking out on what ALS stands for. I want to say that.
It stands for amyotrophic lateral sclerosis.
Amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. There we go.
Yeah. And yeah, you nailed it with the definition. It's essentially your body shuts down while your brain still functions completely normal. So it's a pretty harsh disease, and there's no really like known cause for it. It's just bad luck of the draw, you know?
Yeah. And so you were mentioning to me prior to the interview that this was a huge motivating factor for you, not only in fitness and dieting and things related to accomplishing goals in fitness, but also life in general. How was your relationship affected with your father going through this, and how did it strengthen your motivation?
So it made me really realize when we got that diagnosis that life's short. I know this is kind of like cliche, but it's true. Like when you're young, you want to have fun. You want to go out with your friends. You want to do stuff all the time. You think you're invincible. You'll do stupid things and you won't think about it, you know? And then all of a sudden someone in your family gets sick and it's terminal and you just don't know what to think. You're just stunned. And then it makes you sit there and think about it and go, wow, that could happen to anybody at any single point in time. You know, so it really put life into perspective for me, and it made me start to want to push harder for my goals. It made me motivated. It made me sad. As much as it made me sad, it made me motivated and wanted me to achieve more so I could show my dad that I was capable of taking care of myself while he still had the chance to see that. And that's exactly what I did. I had started a business the same year he was diagnosed, actually. He was diagnosed in 2015. And I started a drop shipping business in November of 2015, I think it was. And I started booming with that and started making money, and I was showing him that I was running a business, and I was 18 years old, and he was like always had this huge smile on his face. And it really, seeing him go downhill and then watching my business go uphill, it's kind of contradictory. Like, it motivated me. It made me want to do more. It made me want to continue to push to reach my ultimate goal, which was true freedom and happiness. Not that money is the goal for that, but money makes it easier to to have freedom, you know? So that's basically what I want to be able to do is not have to, I want to be financially secure. I want to have my kids not worry about money. I want to have a family someday. It's like all this stuff that just made me push and push and push so I could be able to afford to support something like that someday for my family.
If you don't mind me asking, how is your father doing?
He actually passed away in November of 2018.
I'm sorry to hear that. Sorry to go through that.
It's tough. It's definitely tough. And saying it's one thing to watch someone slowly pass away in front of you and like degenerate. And it's another thing to have someone just gone instantly. Like, I don't know per se which one's worse, because one you can prepare for and be able to say goodbye, and the other one, they're just gone. But thinking about it, I was happy that I was able to say goodbye to him. But at the same time, that was the hardest moment in my entire life so far. And I'm only 22 years old, and that'll probably be one of the hardest moments I'll ever face. So like being at such a young age and having to deal with that, it made me mature and realize that life's short. So just enjoy it and push to reach your goals.
Obviously, you do anything to have your father back. But if there was some sort of a silver lining, most people that have their father pass away at that early of an age don't get a chance to have the sort of financial success that you had, where you're already succeeding at a business. And so towards the end of that parent's life, at least they're comfortable knowing that you're going in the right direction and you're able to support yourself. So I'm sure that was a kind of took some weight off of your father's shoulders.
That's exactly what I was aiming for. I wanted to show him that he raised me to be a good man. He raised me with the right morals, to not lay around and just let life pass you by. He raised me to reach my goals, to just continue striving and to always put your ideas into reality. And that's exactly what he did. And I proved that to him while I had the chance. And that's something I'm very, very grateful for myself, is that I showed him that I was able to live a fulfilled life because of him, the way he raised me.
Yeah. And you said in a message when we were going back and forth before the interview, you said you wanted to gain the muscle that your father couldn't. And that really stood out to me, because I've never been in a position where my own physical well-being was tied to that great of a purpose. I want to be physically fit to have longevity. I want to be healthy. I want to look good. I want to feel good. But when you said you wanted to gain the muscle that your father couldn't and the muscle that your father lost, that kind of hit me on a whole deeper level, having your work ethic tied into what your father was going through.
Yeah, that's the moment I realized that fitness wasn't just something that I would be practicing for my health and longevity in life. I realized it was something that I was passionate about and that it had a purpose for me. And when he was sick, he was going downhill, and every day he would lose more ability. Like he was in a matter of a month, he would go from walking and talking to a walker with slurring his words. And then a month later he couldn't stand up and he could barely make out what he was saying. And like his hands, his fingers wouldn't move. His arms would slowly go away. Like his arm muscle would slowly just dissipate. You know what I mean? Mm. And then that made me realize like why I have the ability to gain muscle. I have the ability to go to the gym and to better myself. He doesn't. Why am I not taking up that action to try to make the best of me possible, you know? So after that point, I started going to the gym hard again. And I always had a love for going to the gym. I always wanted to be like a big muscular guy, but I didn't really push myself to those extremes because I was always busy doing other things. But this was the point that it made me realize I want to, everything that he can't gain, that he's losing, I want to take it. Mm-hmm. I want to take it and I want to run. I want to run for the hills. So every week I would take my shirt off and I would show him, look, Dad, I'm gaining muscle. Yeah. Like it sounds weird, but like,
no, I mean, I bet he loved that.
Yeah. And I'd look at his face and he'd have a huge grin on his face because he couldn't talk at that point. So he'd always be smiling. Right. And then the next week I'd come back and I'd be even just a teeny bit bigger and I'd have another new vein on my arm or something. And then he had this machine that he would talk on. Mm-hmm. He used his eyes and he would blink for each key. and he would spell out words and he would say like, proud of you, like, good job, keep going. And he would tell me like, cause he used to weightlift back in his day. He would say, try taking creatine, try taking this, try taking that, see if it helps. And I tried a few things and they helped, the other things not so much, but he always helped me with his experiences as well to try to better myself. And I just thought, damn, I love fitness. I love working out. Yeah. I love having the ability to build muscle, to lose fat. It's just, it's such a cool feeling looking in the mirror and seeing your body change. And then I realized after that, that why am I just doing this just for myself? Like I feel like I have a purpose where I want to help others get the same feeling. Like I feel so great when I look in the mirror after 2 weeks of progress and you just see a little bit less fat on your stomach or you see a little bit more muscle on your chest. It's just like, I want others to have this feeling of accomplishment and proudness of themselves. And that's basically when I started my new brand. And I've been doing that for about, I think I started it in January. So it'd be what, 8 months now, almost 9 months. Mm-hmm. And that's when I created the Twitter account, the Forever Fit. And that's where my username or my brand name Everfit came from. And I've been taking that and trying to run as fast as I can with it. And I haven't been happier trying to grow a business ever.
And I definitely want to get into the business aspect, but what you went through with your dad and finding this energy to turn a life-changing situation like that into something positive, it kind of draws parallels, at least for me, to the actual practice of intermittent fasting compared to the type of society we're living in today, because the victim culture is permeating a lot of aspects of society where basically you can profit both socially and financially by saying that you're a victim and kind of laying down and letting things happen to you and point out how everyone else is wrong, and people will reward you for that. And intermittent fasting requires a self-accountability and a suffering. And then once you go through that period of suffering, which is the fasting, you are rewarded for having put in that time and been able to go without food. And tying back to your father having ALS, a lot of people might use that as an excuse to say, like, you know, this is just too much. I can't do this right now. Which there's nothing wrong with going through a period of time like that. I can't imagine having lost a father, especially that young. Luckily, both of my parents are still with me and they're still healthy. But I feel like a lot of people would use that as a long-term reason for why they haven't reached a certain place in life. And obviously, you haven't done that.
Yeah, I tried to take the negative energy, and like it was very difficult. Obviously, I had that mentality for probably about the first 2 months of after the diagnosis, where I was just like, "This can't be happening." You know, why me? Why me out of all people? Why my dad? Why not? Like, you know, and I realized that this self-pitying isn't going to get me anywhere. The only thing that's going to get me anywhere is if I get off my ass and try to take this energy and put it to good use so I can show my dad that he has a son that he's proud of. Like, you know, I had the average person with ALS lives 2 to 5 years after the diagnosis. And from that moment, I knew I had roughly 2 to 5 years to try to reach as much as I could. I tried to reach for the sky in such a little time. And luckily, I had a ridiculous work ethic, and I was able to show him that I could support myself. And ultimately, I don't even know where to go with this. It was just, it just made me happy that he knew that I was secure and that I could support myself.
Was there any conversation or moment that you had either internally or a conversation with someone else, your father, someone you were confiding in, that allowed you to flip that switch from turning the negativity into a positive work ethic? Because I'm sure, you know, someone listening to this may be in a similar situation, whether it's a parent who's sick or something else going on with a relative. Was there anything that helped you flip into that different mode of being able to turn the negative energy into positive outcomes for yourself?
honestly, there's no like actual particular thing per se, but one thing I could say is the having the self-pity and the victim mentality literally doesn't get you anywhere. I know it's a raging problem with my generation. I'm not sure which year you're born, but I was born in 1997, and the younger generation have this viewpoint that the world owes them things, even though it really doesn't. Like, the only way to make yourself feel better is to reach accomplishment, I found. So for me, because I'm an entrepreneur, I started a business, and that was my accomplishment. It might not be for the same for everyone, but take that negativity and do your best to harness it and try to switch it into something that you're passionate about. If you don't know what you're passionate about, just need to try new hobbies. You need to try new things. Go play a new sport. Try reading a new book. Try anything new, and realize that by doing this, you're more likely to find something that you're passionate about. And once you do find that thing that you're passionate about, take it and run as far as you can. And honestly, try to don't be a how's that saying go? It's a master of one, no, master of
a master of none and a jack of all trades or something like that.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, I like to take one thing and try to become a master at one thing, because when you get really advanced at something, for me, it was trying to build a business. It's satisfying. And it made me feel accomplished. It made me feel good that I had the ability to reach that height of that aspect in life, you know, entrepreneurship. So for some, it might be like guitar playing. Get really good at guitar. Keep playing until people are like, wow, that guy can be a professional guitarist in a band or something. And that's just an example. Like, I think that following what you're passionate about and getting really good at something to take your mind off of what's going on is something that will really help you.
And ironically, by trying to become a master at one thing, like fitness or spreading the word about intermittent fasting, if you want to build a business with that, whatever you choose, you have to both be a master and then cultivate different buckets of knowledge with or without even realizing it. So for example, take your business. You've had to not only have the knowledge base about fitness, but you have to do copywriting, you're writing blog posts, you're putting it into digestible tweets, you're becoming a master of social media, you've built a great following on Twitter especially, you are talking to other people, you're telling them about your product, you're being a salesman, whether you realize it or not. Regardless of what you get into, everyone is a salesman in some aspect, because whether you're giving a product or a service or both, you have to get people to exchange their money and time to look at what you're doing. And so by chasing that passion and becoming a master in one thing, you are indirectly cultivating other pockets of mastery, or not even mastery, but just
experience. You're building knowledge in other areas.
And serviceable skills, even though you may not be a master, enough to get by to do what you're doing and spread the word about it and build a business about it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like, for me, I had a background in social media marketing and stuff prior to launching this business. That's why I had my first business was I used influencer marketing and built that one. I think I built that to just over $400,000 in revenue in 3 years. And I was proud of myself for that.
Was it your own page? Like, you were the influencer, or what type of marketing was it?
It was like, they're called parody accounts. Mm-hmm. Like, if you go on Instagram and you see like,
is it kind of like a meme account or something? Oh yeah, like Fuck Jerry. Were you gonna say Fuck Jerry?
Oh, that's literally exactly what I was gonna say.
Yeah, yeah, you can swear you want.
Yeah, so him.
It doesn't take any calories to swear. You could swear in the morning all you want.
Yeah. People like that, where they have like this account that's like, it's not directly related to them. They usually post like memes or something like that. You take that and you try to buy advertisements on their pages for your company. That's what I was doing. So I'd have all these accounts in a list where I would buy shout outs on Instagram from them, and Twitter accounts where I'd buy retweets. And I would set up marketing campaigns daily and for new products, and I'd see what would sell. And I would then, whatever I found to sell, I would scale it out and then buy more and more and more. And that's called influencer marketing. Mm-hmm. You know? So that's exactly what I did. And Facebook advertising eventually took over, and that's what a lot of people are doing now. And I don't really like Facebook or their advertising, so I stayed away from that. And I realized that that company I was selling before was clothes and hats, and mm-hmm. it was just generic stuff and clothes, like other sort of women's clothing, bikinis and all that. But mm-hmm. I realized that wasn't really my passion. Like, I like clothes. I like wearing them. I don't really give a shit about what they look like.
Yeah.
So, that's pretty much the extent of my passion for clothes. So I shut down that business just recently, and I started the fitness one because I like I said before, I realized it was my passion, and that's what I wanted to help people get the feeling that I felt when I was showing my dad my progress. I want them just to be able to show their wife or their husband or whatever, like, look, I'm making progress. I feel great. And that's what I've been able to do with my new brand, Everfit. And I've had, I think, 70 clients now, and it's been 8 months.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah, I'm so pumped.
So going back to Everfit, I want people to, go check it out. I want everyone listening to this podcast to go check it out as a resource for fitness and intermittent fasting. I wish I came across something like this back when I was in high school. I wish I kind of hopped on the train earlier, but I'm grateful for the type of information that you're putting out now. For people that are listening that aren't familiar with Everfit, what is Everfit and what inspired you to create this platform as a business beyond just the passion, like you were saying before?
So Everfit is my brand that I started. Honestly, ironically, it came from my username. I just created a username on Twitter called The Forever Fit. Mm-hmm. And I realized Everfit kind of sounds cool. I can make a brand out of that. So I said,
yeah, it does.
You know what? Screw it. I'll create this and I'll see if it goes anywhere. I honestly had no idea if people would care what I was talking about or if they'd even believe me that intermittent fasting was useful or that any of the information I was putting out was like even relevant to what they were needing. So I put it together, and within, I think I started in December of 2018 was my first tweet. Within 2 months, I had over 2,000 followers, and I was just like, well, shit, I think people like what I'm saying. So
yeah.
So I was kind of scared.
Yeah, I think now you have over 7,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
In only 8 months or something. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's been booming the last little while. Like I'll go on in the morning and I'll see I've gained 100 followers. And I was like, mm-hmm. I don't even know where these people are coming from. No complaints. I appreciate all you guys for listening.
Yeah, less people retweet him. It's too many. I'm just kidding.
But yeah, Everfit's about forever moving forward, forever making progress, and forever being happy. That's basically what the goal of it is. It's to incorporate intermittent fasting in your life because it's so effortless that it's a thing that you practice every day without even thinking about it, that it helps you improve your quality of life with minimal effort. So I figured if I could help people do this, why not? And it's been taking off. And honestly, I'm the happiest I've ever been before with a business. And I hope it keeps going uphill. I'm going to keep working my ass off as it does. So
I'm sure like it will. I'm sure that it will. That first part didn't make sense. I mean, a lot of people don't get to the point where they're able to monetize their passion. And it sounds like the influencer marketing, being able to tie what you learned in that realm of your life, has definitely had at least some carryover into Everfit and allowed you to use the tools from that to expand the growth.
That's exactly what I did. I said, I have knowledge of marketing. I have experience with influencer marketing. I'm pretty good with social media. So I said, I've been growing these accounts and I've been buying posts off of all these random accounts, but like, why don't I do something for me? Why don't I try growing an account for myself and monetizing it that way? And that's when I started the account on Twitter, and it's been popping off. And I keep using my social marketing skills that I've learned over the last 7 years, and obviously it's working. So I'm just going to take it and run now.
I think a good spot to end off, since we've talked about the positives of intermittent fasting, how you got into fitness, the story of your father and building the business, I think to make it an even-keeled conversation, kind of a fair podcast, would be to address maybe some of the misconceptions or things that people have said that they think are negative about intermittent fasting. I tried to look up a few. And so some of the things that I found online that people have said may have been negative side effects or things that they haven't liked about it are, I actually haven't really experienced any of these, but I'll just go ahead and list them. Some people have said heartburn, binge eating, trouble sleeping in the middle of a fast, coffee dependence, and decrease in libido. Maybe the coffee dependence a little bit, but I think I was drinking a lot of coffee before I started fasting, so I don't think that necessarily had an effect on it. But is there anything that was listed or anything that you've experienced that has been somewhat negative about intermittent fasting?
My number one negative, and my girlfriend would definitely agree with me on this one, is near the end of my fast, I get hangry. So, yeah. So near like around 1 p.m., about an hour before, usually the final hour of my fast, just say, just eat now. Like I'm sick of you being ornery, or I'm sick of you, you being hangry. And then sometimes I'll eat at 1:30 or something. But other than that, personally, I found a more energetic and like, and happier at being fasted in a fasted state. But another negative I would say is hunger. So sometimes you do, like you're not always going to be not hungry, especially near the end of your fast, is being able to have the self-discipline to deal with hunger. And a lot of people can't handle it because they're not used to it. But I'll tell you this, that after even 2 months of doing it, you'll be able to control yourself more. It builds a lot of self-discipline because you have to make yourself wait to eat. So honestly, I don't really know any negatives personally, but the libido thing, I honestly recommend intermittent fasting for the opposite, to help raise your libido.
Yeah, I've heard it increases testosterone and HGH production.
Exactly my point. And it makes you feel more confident with yourself once you start losing some weight. So like I actually disagree with that one. But another one I do get in my DMs occasionally is binge eating. And that one is one that's hard to combat, because if you find you fast and then you, every single time you're fasting, you binge eat after, intermittent fasting might not be for you. So like it is a very effective strategy and tool for weight loss, but people who have troubles with binge eating or other eating disorders, it might not be for them. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with not intermittent fasting, as long as you can control yourself. If you eat all day, just don't try not to binge eat in between the all day eating, you know? And I get a couple people consistently saying, oh, I always end my fast with a binge and I'm eating way too much and I eat all these sweets and all this. And it's like, I would maybe either shorten your fast or just perhaps don't fast. Like don't binge, don't do this to yourself. It might not be the best strategy for you, because like keto works for some people, intermittent fasting works for others, low carb works for others, high fat works for others. Like find what works for you, what you enjoy, take it and run.
I didn't want people to think it was some intermittent fasting is some sort of magic pill where you feel great all the time and you never feel hungry. Like you definitely go through times of hunger, and especially early on, like you might be like, oh, fuck this. Like I'm just going to eat. But it definitely does
improve,
expand. Yeah, it improves and it expands your ability to function without food. I think one of the things that helped me, you mentioned people having difficulty dealing with hunger, which I definitely do sometimes. This seems counterintuitive, but when I go for a walk, that kind of takes my mind off of it. And at the end of the walk, I feel less hungry and a little bit more energized. So if it's around like 11:30, 11 o'clock at work, I might go for a 15-minute walk outside the office and come back. And for whatever reason, I don't know any of the science behind it, I can go another hour and a half without thinking about food. I don't know if it has to do with the increase in heart rate, or maybe, you know, just doing an activity takes your mind off of it instead of just sitting there wanting to eat food.
Yeah.
Have you ever had any experiences similar to that?
That's typically what I recommend to people who have troubles reaching their fast, is keep your mind busy. Like if you're sitting there thinking about food, you're going to make yourself hungrier. If you sit there and think you're going to throw up, you're eventually going to make yourself throw up. It's all in your mind. So if you get your mind off of food, go out, go for a walk, go for a run, go to the gym, read a book, do some productive work, anything to get your mind off of food. And before you know it, your end of your fast will be there and you'll be like, wow, I could go another hour without eating. I feel great right now.
So to end off, this is a question I'll ask a lot of our guests. What books or podcasts do you find yourself recommending the most to other people? And it could be outside of intermittent fasting and fitness. It could just be something for life in general. What are the books and podcasts, other maybe blogs, articles you find yourself gifting to other people the most?
My number one favorite book, to be honest, that helped me with the way I handle criticism and the way people think about me is a book by the name of The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
Oh, by Mark Manson.
Yeah, that one. That is hands down my favorite book and the one that's helped me the most, because there's certain things that you don't need to give a fuck about in life and you don't realize it. But that book puts it into perspective and helps you only give fucks about things that you need to care about.
We could have a whole nother 2-hour podcast on that. I love that book. That's something that I'll try to reread 4 or 5 times throughout the course of my life, I'm sure. I love revisiting that book.
It's a really good book. And then as for another book I like is The 12 Principles of Life, 12 Rules of Life.
Is that Jordan Peterson?
Yeah, that one. Yep.
I like the concepts he talks about in his public speaking.
Me as well,
bids,
yeah.
Or the public. Yeah, I haven't read the book. I've heard some of his lectures on 12 Rules for Life. Haven't read the book yet. It's on my list, but I'll definitely check it out.
And then as for podcasts, you already mentioned it. Probably the number one in the world, I believe, by a mile, Joe Rogan.
Joe Rogan is, I think, one of the most interesting
people
on the planet.
In the world, yes. Definitely.
I don't think we'll truly appreciate the mind of Joe Rogan until he's no longer with us.
He's a unique thinker. Crazy. Listening to him talk on his podcast, it's like he's the most entertaining person in the world for me to listen to. Like, you don't even have to see him. You just listen to him, his thoughts, his ideas. It's like his brain works differently than everyone else's. I love it.
Did you see the petition for him to host one of the presidential debates?
No, I didn't, but I would pay to watch that.
I think it surpassed the minimum number of signatures you need for the White House to make a statement. I think it's 150,000. Last time I checked, it was approaching that. So I'm sure it's passed by now. But someone started a petition to have Joe Rogan host one of the presidential debates. And now I think the White House has to come out and make a statement on whether they're going to allow this to happen or not.
I feel it's like crazy. That would be the most televised event if that were a thing.
Dude, oh my God, it would be nuts, because I would love to see who he picks alongside him to host, because he's had so many interesting people he respects on a podcast that will actually talk about things that matter and will not be afraid to go back at people and challenge their ideas like he does so well. So I'm sure that whatever panel, if that actually happened, I would pay so much money to see that.
I would pay 100%. If they wanted to be greedy, they could definitely charge money for it. And I feel like people would pay to watch.
Oh, dude, that'd be the most watched pay-per-view event of all time if they did that.
Yeah, I would, you get me hyped up now. I might do some more research on this. I really want to see if it's going to happen.
Yeah, go check it out. I think it was last week was when I saw the update about the signatures approaching the limit. So I'm curious to go back and see where it's at.
Definitely. I'm typing them in right now, actually.
But yeah. Thanks again for taking the time to hop on the podcast. I want to make sure we get the ending in before the Wi-Fi cuts out.
Yeah, no worries. But I appreciate you having me. It's been a great experience. This is my first time being on a podcast. And honestly, I can come back on anytime if you'd have me.
Yeah, dude, of course. I love shooting the shit, especially about a lot of the things we talked about that are tangential to fitness and intermittent fasting. It seems like we're interested in a lot of the same things. And also, I think podcasting too would be a great tool for you to get the word out even further. And you speak very well. You're able to articulate your ideas in a clear fashion. So you could even make up I know some people make up press releases and they'll kind of like shoot them out to different podcasters and say like, hey, this is what I do if you want to have me on as a guest. And I'm sure people would love to have you.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I've seen a couple other fitness guys start podcasts on Twitter and they're doing pretty well too. The only thing I thought about was like, I would love to do it. I just don't know if I have unlimited concepts to talk about or if I'd just be repeating myself, but I guess I wouldn't know unless I actually try it, you know? So.
Yeah. I recommend it. You can always stop, or you can always, people get around it too by making seasons. So they'll say like, the first season will be dedicated to this, and then they'll take a 2-3 month break and then they'll go back to it. So you could always kind of do it as like an educational thing where you're going to address one aspect of intermittent fasting or fitness or something else related, like influencer marketing, something like that, and then move to another topic if you're worried about running out of ideas.
Actually, that's actually pretty cool. I didn't know that they made seasons.
Yeah, I mean, you could do whatever you want. Podcasting is kind of like the Wild West, at least right now. There's no set format or anything that people stick to. You can do 5-minute episodes. You can do 2-hour episodes. You can break it up into seasons. You basically control your own show. It's like having your own Twitter, basically. It's like your personalized show.
Interesting. I'll have to look more into this. Like, since this is my first podcast, I've been enjoying it. It's fun. You know, it's laid back. You just chill, have a conversation. But the fact that people find value in listening to what you have to say, one, makes you feel good. It makes you feel knowledgeable. And two, it's cool. Like, cause podcasting is like, I feel like it's like the thing right now. It's like booming. Everything's like, oh, I have a podcast. Check out my podcast. Listen to this podcast. Have you heard this podcast? It's like, 10 years ago, were podcasts a thing? Like, I don't even think they were.
Early on, not nearly as many people were doing it. I think there's 400,000 shows now in podcasts. But if you think about it, it's not that much, because if you have a niche, you can separate yourself by being knowledgeable and speaking well and having good content. So in that 400,000 number show, however many shows are out there, there's a lot of wiggle room and a lot of room for expertise. So I suggest doing it. I think it's helped me just work on my speaking and being able to articulate my ideas and getting more comfortable going back and forth with people. I think if you just take away the listeners, it's worth it just to build your conversational skills. I definitely feel more confident talking to people just in everyday situations. It's like, if I just talk to this person that I've never met before for an hour, like, I can go up and talk to this girl for like 30 seconds, or like go talk to this guy in a suit who seems intimidating, or like whatever situation, because I feel like it's so easy to psych yourself out in the everyday social situations. There's definitely a carryover.
Yeah, I'd agree with that too. I feel like I could definitely work on my social skills too, because I'm more of a quiet guy to myself. I do my own thing, and I'll talk to people when I want to talk to people. So this is probably considered out of my comfort zone, because I find sometimes I have troubles articulating ideas or getting out what I'm trying to say, where I'll have to pause for a few seconds. But like, even by the end of this podcast, I'm already being able to talk better than I was at the beginning, and I'm comfortable, and it's easy.
Oh yeah, you kind of get into the flow. And this is definitely out of my comfort zone too. When I started podcasting, I would say I'm still an introvert. I haven't changed really personality wise, but I've learned to put myself in the mode of conversation, if that makes sense, more easily. Like I'm not naturally talkative all the time. I get drained by conversation where, you know, other people, if you're more extroverted, you gain energy by talking to people. Like you constantly feed off of that. For me, like I'll do an hour, 2-hour podcast, and then my brain will be like mush, and then I'll recharge, and then the next day I'll do another one. So it's kind of like you can create your own schedule and adapt to your own tendencies, which is kind of what I love about podcasting.
Yeah, yeah, I'm more of an introvert too, and I don't really go out of my way to make conversation with people unless they talk to me. So the fact that you invited me on here was actually, like I said, out of my comfort zone. But that's the whole point of where growth lies. It's leaving your comfort zone to try something new. And obviously, this was a great experience for me. And I'm going to probably see if any other podcasts will host me now, or if you'll have me back or whatever. So it's definitely a good idea.
Yeah, dude, I'll definitely have you back. And 100%, dude, podcasting is, I don't know, what's the term for it again? There's like an enormous supply of podcasters, and there's a demand for guests. So
correct.
If you're someone who knows what they're talking about, which obviously you are, and you have your own niche that you're able to speak on, people would love to talk to you. So I highly suggest reaching out to people. And thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of Auxoro with Marshall McKenzie. You can find out more about Marshall by following him on Twitter at @theforeverfit and by visiting his website, marshallmckenzie.com. Links are both in the description of this podcast. And whether you've been listening to the Auxoro podcast for one episode or 50, I am incredibly grateful for your presence and energy. And I hope that you continue along on this ride with me. I am driven by the feedback that we get from our listeners and how we are having an effect on people's lives, however small that may be, whether there's, 100 people listening to this week, 1,000, 1,000,000. It really does mean a lot when we get messages from you guys saying how much you enjoyed an episode or changed your perspective on this, or you started thinking about things a little differently. And I feel the same thing when I talk to one of our guests. I'm doing it for myself and to share these conversations with other people. So thank you for following along with me on this ride. I cannot stress how grateful I am for everyone who listens to Auxoro. So yeah, that brings me to the end of this episode, and I'll see you guys next time.